Bet on Bears fans, another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast coming your way. Pat the designer, Courtney Cronin, we're back in the building and we got a preview. It's finally here, ladies and gentlemen. Training camp start. I mean, it's technically started, but it starts this weekend. We get to hear from the head coach and, of course, the general manager, Tamar Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus. So excited to have real football back. And so we got to preview our expectations, what we really want to see, and who we think is going to make this team coming out of training camp. We'll be talking about all that more in today's episode of the Chicago Bears podcast. Hit that like button, subscribe to the page, leave a 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. Courtney, the work now begins. The vacations are over and we're back at it.
It's wild. I have my calendar next to me and, you know, I've got practice written out every single day. 2 weeks from right now, we'll probably be going to the stadium in Canton for the Hall of Fame game, which is, it's wild to think about. There's football, probably not great football, as we know at the Hall of Fame game. It's like a glorified scrimmage, more or less. But maybe we see Caleb Williams for a series. Who knows? I know that question's going to be coming for Matt Eberflus earlier than he'll probably have an answer ready for, but 2 weeks from right now, there will be a football game played on a football field, and that will be the start of the 2024 season. It's crazy.
No, I mean, it's very exciting to get to. Glad to finally have it. And I think the thing for me with training camp, the thing that I'm looking for the most, and I've said this a few times on the podcast, are we going to see it be a little bit more up-tempo? We got to see the pace picked up. Because we got a lot of new faces in here. Keenan Allen, Caleb Williams, Roma Dunze. A lot of new pieces on this offensive line. Offensively, when we're looking at kind of training camp getting itself going, what are you really looking to see as we kind of get into this first weekend and as we go through the next couple of weeks before we get to that Hall of Fame game?
So it's slow at first. And I know the question everybody's going to have is, how does Caleb Williams look with his top three receivers? And getting the, those sorts of first, you know, impressions now that they're all back together from Keenan Allen, from Caleb, from DJ Moore, and from Roma Dunze. I remember Keenan talked about this back in the spring. And remember, like early on, there was that one practice where Caleb threw a red zone interception and the defense was just letting him hear all about it. And Kevin Byard came up to him, the veteran safety who just joined the team this offseason, and said, keep going. We've got you. These moments are going to happen, but these moments are going to make you feel better down the line, as crappy as you probably feel throwing an interception in practice early on, because you're going against a great defense. Now that you're going to have the full complement of your roster there, because there were moments this spring where it was kind of hard to figure out, all right, how are we getting a feel for what this offense is going to be? And they were doing the very base stuff. So we're not going to know until further along into camp, how heavy is this offense going to be predicated on the pass? How heavy is it going to be predicated on the run when you have as much talent as they do? And when you have as much talent, the receiver position, who is that number one guy? It's going to take a couple weeks into camp till we figure out, who's emerging as such for this offense. But what Keenan Allen said to us back in June was that, a couple weeks into, you get back, You leave off in June, you get back in July, early August, and by the first week of camp, you'll be able to start tell, that chemistry's here. Because there's no longer you don't usually have the leash as long anymore to mistakes can happen. We'll get another rep. We'll do it again. There will be time to do that, but the same stuff that might have been the, introductory phase of the offense back in May, they've got to be able to move past that within a couple days of being in camp, so then they can start installing and start going through the more complex X's and O's of this offense. And I guess I'm curious to see how quickly can they get there, because obviously you don't expect and you don't want to see the offense be right back where it was at the end of May, when they did show some considerable signs of growth, especially Caleb Williams and his command of this offense. But you just want to see the work that these guys put in individually in the summer. How does that reflect itself in how they look? How does that reflect itself in just Caleb Williams being able to grasp where everybody needs to be, the false starts, some of those penalties that we saw happen multiple times when there were officials at practice? Are those things still popping up? Because that's a pretty obvious and immediate sign of growth that you can tangibly see if that stuff the bad stuff, like those things are not happening when the team's now together and soon to be in pads in the not too distant future.
And that's what's going to be interesting, right? Where you have to look at, right, the false starts, I think, was something that was so prevalent over the first two. And we kept hearing about he's got to get the cadence right. Mm-hmm. He's got to figure out that cadence. That like it sounded like it was the only thing they were worried about with him, which I guess is a good thing to start off, right? When you're not like, ah, I don't know, the arm talent's a little questionable. It makes you feel a little bit better. But I think that, right, the biggest question on that to me isn't Caleb Williams, but who are the five offensive linemen that are going to be out there? Are you going to see all five of them out there? And is it going to be something where you can see them kind of grow together? And I thought it was interesting kind of hearing Tevin Jenkins and some of the things that he had said when he was talking with Carmen Vitale and you know, talking about the scheme last year. And he was saying, you know, the scheme felt a little, you know, not to point fingers, but felt a little selfish. You know, it felt like everybody wasn't working together on that. I would hope to see that be a little bit different this season, especially on that offensive line with the questions that they have, because I don't know who's playing center just yet, because I don't know if we got our right guard locked in and fully penciled in just yet.
Yeah, and that's fair. Like, when you think about how many spots, open spots, there are on this team, there aren't many. No. Like, it's so different from the last couple of years. You remember when Ryan Poles said at the end of the draft that this is a team where it's going to be really difficult to make the roster, to make the 53, unlike the last couple of years where they're piecing stuff together and they're just signing guys to be able to fill out a roster.
Yeah.
That's not the case this year. You think about offense, center seems at least like it's kind, it should be locked up based on what we've heard, but then Matt Eberflus opens the door of, like, you know, when asked, like, is Ryan Bates a starting center? He didn't commit to that right away. Now, early on in camp and where you see the reps start to come in, like who's the first team O-line, who's the second team, like now these things matter. In the spring, they're moving guys in and out, cross-training at different positions. They have to do that. They will still continue to do that, whether it's Matt Pryor getting some snaps on the at center, or moving around from guard, Coleman Shelton, certainly Ryan Bates. But now you'll be able to start seeing what those combinations look like. And I know that they will still try to tell you that nothing is set, but get the center position solidified and solidified early, because you have a rookie quarterback coming in here who, when we were talking about the cadence, it's not just on him and the center barking out the play and making sure that four other offensive linemen know what their assignments are, who needs to be in what gap, everything else. It's, does the quarterback, A, can he hear us? Can we hear him? Can he hear us? And knowing what all they have to, like, how all they have to be on the same page, that's really difficult. So you want from the very jump of training camp to be on the same page there. And that's just not an easy thing to get to do if you have a lot of pieces moving in and out. And you mentioned right guard. You know, we didn't see a whole lot of Nate Davis during the spring. If that's the case right now, when they get to training camp and, you know, first practice is Saturday. So if he's not out there, and we, you know, vets report on Friday, so we'll have a chance to see if there's anybody that's starting on NFI, on physically unable to perform, if there are any sort of longstanding injuries, because remember, they don't have to report anything in the spring. They didn't say many guys were dealing with anything other than some soft tissue stuff during the spring, but now you'll know if there is a holdup or an issue for why somebody's not on the field, at least from, like, the very beginning of training camp, some guys will have an injury designation that you can then kind of assume based on, like, what the injury designation is, how long they might have to miss. But if Nate Davis isn't out there, I think that's a cause for concern, because last year, some of the stuff he was going through off the field, understandable. You can see why he wasn't out there, and knowing that stuff in hindsight makes sense. But this year, they've got to start seeing some of the return on investment, if we're being frank about that, especially at that position.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, listen, it's fully guaranteed money. So you'd like to see that out there. Let's do this exercise real quick. Let's run through and kind of give our 53-man roster position. Look at some of these positions that, I mean, I think there's a couple of guys that you, like you said, for the most part, this roster is locked up. But there's a couple of guys where you could say, okay, to save some money or maybe to make some money here, like, is there some camp cuts that we could see? Are there some surprising names? Let's start it off. Caleb Williams makes the team, right? Let's go. We're good on that one.
That one's good. But, like, I think they're keeping – so, like, last year, I remember I do this exercise, like, twice. I do it before training camp, and then I do it right up until cut down day. So right. Last year, I remember thinking, okay, with Justin, it's a completely different circumstance with Justin Fields, with Bagent was on the roster. Like, I don't know if he, I don't actually remember if I had him even
making
like,
the roster,
making the roster, but like, you know, it was PJ Walker. It was much different trying to go through that exercise, but also now knowing
Walker.
Yeah. And like, you remember, like there was, well, he signed as a free agent and then they cut him.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that this is a, like, some people have given me this question, like, are they going to potentially sign a veteran? I think regardless of whatever happens, and I don't think they sign a veteran because they don't, you don't really, you have the number one overall pick. This is his team. You don't necessarily need to bring somebody in who may have that experience, but also maybe wanting to like prove that they can still play and fighting for that job. That's not like been their philosophy for how they're going to handle this. So I think they have two quarterbacks on the roster. I think it's Tyson Bagent is the number two. He looked good in spring. Like, you could see some signs of growth. He looked stronger. The ball came out of his hand quickly. All of the things that they had said, like, they wanted to see more of from him. Like, he's a capable starter if he has to go into a game, from what we saw in four starts last year with two wins on his record. So I think they keep two. I think Brett Rypien ends up being on the practice squad. And I still have in my firm belief, from what they've told us, that they like their structure, that Ryan Griffin, as an assistant coach working with the offense and particularly having all that experience over 10 years as a backup for Drew Brees and Tom Brady at points of his career, that's good for Caleb Williams. So of the 53 spots available on the roster, I've got two going to the quarterback position.
Yeah, I agree with you. You also have to take into account how the Bears did it last year and how they've done it for the last couple of years. Most quarterbacks don't want to do that, right?
Yeah.
Was it Nathan Peterman? He's getting cut every week. Yeah, I mean, then they re-signed him to the practice
squad. Down. I have to check on this. I think he's down in New Orleans. I think he ended up following Andrew Janoco, is now the quarterback's coach down there. So I think he's down there as a backup to Derek Carr. But you're right. Like, you know, guys want to go where they have a chance to. Yeah, he is with the Saints. Guys want to go where they have a chance to play, or at least like be a part of that. And I think the Bears have done a good job figuring out the structure of the most important position room effectively on the team, and making sure that Caleb's not only insulated, but has experience around him, like an array of experiences, someone who has young and experienced within winning games for this team. Not many, but like still was part of this team last year. So he knows the culture, he knows the feel, he knows the offense by and large, because of a lot of the personnel is the same in Tyson Bagent. Somebody who has been around as a journeyman quarterback who knows this offense specifically in Brett Rypien.
Exactly.
And then, you know, having someone like Ryan Griffin, who's been in a couple different systems and is a coach now, like, it's just kind of a way of, you know, it's a creative way to put this room together. And I think that they did a good job with that.
Exactly. No, 100%. And even right, like, we talked about last year, there were things that Tyson Bagent did that we were like, listen, I wasn't on the Bagent should be the starter the rest of the year train. I know there was a lot of that, but like, I was like, listen, how he lets the football go, Justin should learn that part. Like, to say there's nothing that he can learn from what Tyson did when his time in there, it was asinine. So like, I think that, you know, same thing with Caleb Williams. You, like you said, he's got some experience. He's been in the offense. He understands how things work. There's things that Caleb can learn from him. We just hope that Caleb is the answer. Let's take a look at the running back room. Now, the running back room is a little bit more interesting now, because essentially you've got two running backs that Ryan Poles has committed draft capital and money to, right? You start off with DeAndre Swift, Roschon Johnson, as well as a Ryan Poles commit. Khalil Herbert on this list, he's making $1.8 million. And then Travis Homer is the other big name there that may make it because of special teams, in my mind. When you look at least those four from a running back position, do you see all four of those making the roster, or do you have a different setup for that?
I've got those four making the roster, with the caveat that Khalil Herbert could end up being a cut at some point. Because remember, he's going into a contract year. He is not a Ryan Poles draft pick. For all the good that he has provided, what he provided behind David Montgomery in the first year of the Ryan Poles regime, what they got to see there. But then, like, you know, he got hurt last year and he's been dealing with injuries. And like, if availability comes into question for him, I think that that's something that would be not in his favor at all. Like, Roschon Johnson gives you everything that you want as an RB2 in this offense, and getting to see a bit even bigger role for him this year. If you like, start watching, if you're at training camp, you know, come, what is it, July 26th, I believe, is the first open practice. Start watching how that running back rotation looks, because DeAndre Swift is the featured back in this offense. And I do think, you know, knowing how Shane Waldron's offense is, you know, what they looked like with running backs in the splits in Seattle, it's a two-back system. So they might not necessarily need a third running back in order to you know, be effective offensively. That doesn't mean that they won't keep one on the roster, but I think it probably, you know, just between Kenneth Walker and Zach Charbonnet last year in Seattle, I think you could probably see a very similar setup here in Chicago. And of course, Travis Homer, like, let's not forget, he was in Seattle when Shane Waldron was the offensive coordinator there. Yeah. I think they overlapped for one or two seasons. So who knows? Maybe there is a way that they can get Homer involved where he could end up taking that third running back spot as a change of pace guy and still having that special team role. I'll lump this one in. I'm not so sure that there's a role for Kari Blasingame on this roster. Yeah. And I mean, yeah, some people, I've seen like some different 53s. Like, I split mine up with like running back, and then I always have a separate line for fullback. He played the seventh most snaps on special teams last year, and that's been his contributions, like where his contributions have been heaviest, and that's great. But how does – there wasn't a fullback, a true fullback on the roster in Seattle that Shane Waldron used in three seasons as an offensive coordinator. Could that position effectively be eliminated here where – you know, I mean, the times that Kari Blasingame, like, I still go back, I think it was that Minnesota game when he got, or Minnesota or Vegas, when he was targeted on the first play, and it was Danielle Hunter who sniffed it out. We won't be seeing any of that in this offense, I would imagine. But does the spot for the fullback comes down to how they view the third tight end, which at least at this point is Mercedes Lewis. So that could be, I wouldn't call that a position battle. I just call that like a one or the other if they're determining a numbers-based thing, how they might end up or who they might end up keeping over somebody else.
Yeah, Blasingame's a bubble guy for me as well, because, I mean, listen, I love the fact that he's on the team. I think it really depends on, though, how much do you plan on, if you keep Khalil Herbert, how much do you plan on using him? Because we know one thing about Khalil Herbert. He ain't
durability is the issue. Yeah, and that too, and durability and, like, blocking and pass, you know, pass protection, it's not his thing.
Which I get, right? And people are going to say, well, how can you want them to run? You want them to get the football out and run. I understand that. And Khalil Herbert is very good at that. But I have that guy now. Khalil Herbert as that lead guy, that's fine. When you go out and you pay $7 million for DeAndre Swift, you don't put two of those guys out there. Usually your second back has to be a guy who can make an impact in the passing game. Roshan Johnson would target it, caught 85% of his passes last season. He's usually a guy that has to be able to make an impact in the blocking game. Roshan Johnson was quite literally, outside of Tevin Jenkins, might have been the best blocker on the team. I guess I'll throw Darnell Wright in there as well, right? Mm-hmm. Outside of those two, might have been the best blocker on the team. And he's that guy that just, to me, that one, the running back battle may not even be a play style thing. We know how GMs work. I want my guy. I want my guy to get reps. Roshan Johnson is Ryan Pohl's guy. Khalil Herbert is not. I think Khalil Herbert's a phenomenal back. I'd love to have him on the team, but I just don't know if that's going to happen this season. So I think Kari Blasingame, he might want to hope that Khalil Herbert's on this team, because I think him staying here is tied to Khalil Herbert getting a ton of run as that backup back.
Yeah, and it's a numbers game at that point. You're right. They have done an efficient job of weeding out the players that played a role but weren't their guys that they drafted. They've done that now to where they have the majority of the players on this roster are Ryan Pohl's, either his draft picks, his free agent acquisitions, or guys that he thinks are pillars of the franchise that he didn't draft, but he really likes and wants here, you know, with the contract extensions that he's done for Jalen Johnson and, of course, Cole Kmet just about a year ago. So bubble's a good place to put Khalil Herbert right now, and I would also put Kari Blasingame there as well.
100%. Wide receiver room, I think we got some answers there. I mean, I don't think we got a ton of questions. DJ Moore making the team, Keenan Allen making a team, Roma Dunze making the team. I would assume Tyler Scott is on this team, and then Valish Jones. Any variation there? Is a Dante Pettis sneaking his way onto this team?
So I've gone back and I looked at the first couple years that I've done this exercise, because I do think that there are trends that GMs and coaching staffs, like in terms of the number of guys that they want to keep, like which position are they a little heavy at, which position are they light at? I could see them going six with the receivers and having Pettis be that final guy just because of special teams. We know that the kickoff rule is going to benefit Velus Jones because he's going to get more opportunities to, you know, beyond kickoff to return kickoffs. And this is a chance. I mean, they're not going to give up. This is a third round draft pick. And I know that like Velus has 11 catches over the first 2 years of his career. They're not going to give up on him until they give him what they perceive as every ample opportunity to contribute. And now he finally has this golden ticket, like take this Velus and run with it. Like this is your chance onto the roster to where you have like your chance to make your biggest impact. And I'm not saying that like he won't have, you know, some of those gadget plays in there where he can, you know, come in on the end around and, you know, showcase his speed. But the best way for him to do that is going to end up being as part of the kickoff, you know, on kickoff this year with the new rules. So I and Tyler Scott too. I mean, we saw him come along. Yeah. Did he have some moments of the catch that he dropped in the end zone against, you know, against the Denver Broncos and the, you know, the pass that might've gotten, you know, lost in the lights for him that he, you know, maybe underran against the Detroit Lions. Like those are rookie mistakes. He's a fourth round pick. He's a high ceiling. Like I don't know that anybody is like down on him by any stretch. He's just further down the depth chart because they upgraded the talent of that room, which they absolutely needed to. Like in a matter of 2 months, that thing got reworked to the point where they're not going in being like, all right, it's DJ Moore. And then who?
Yeah.
Mooney, Chase Claypool. Like last year was a completely different story. And now you have 3,000-yard receivers from a year ago, that's going to be fun to watch to see who actually emerges as the number one target. I go back to what I said earlier, like it's probably going to take a little bit of time to get there, but I still think it's DJ Moore. I really do. And I, you know, with Roma Dunze too. So he's a rookie. Like remember they were toying around last year with putting DJ Moore on punt return. Maybe they actually do try to do some of that with Roma Dunze. I don't know. Like you got to find a role for him somewhere. He's the 9th overall pick. And the ball's not going to be always going his way on offense, but that would be, they're going to have more of an opportunity now to do a little bit more with him than I think they would. Like if he was a rookie in a less crowded room where all of it would fall on him.
I think it's the part with Rome is going to be very interesting because I don't think you're going to be able to tell kind of how much he's going to get utilized until maybe week 4. Cause listen, if I'm a defensive coach, I'm looking at DJ Moore, I'm looking at Keenan Allen, and I'm going, there's no way I'm letting those guys touch the ball. We're focusing on them. If a rookie beats us, a rookie finds a way to beat us. I don't care if he is a top 10 rookie. I know what Keenan Allen can do. I know what DJ Moore can do. So I think early on in the season, maybe first 2 or 3 weeks, Rome might have a ton of opportunities. And if he takes advantage of them, I do wonder kind of like where the Keenan Allen situation ends up because last year of a contract, signed with Clutch, which tells you one thing. He wants his money. Let's not even pretend maybe he'll be smart.
It's smart because it's the same agency that represents Montez Sweat. So exactly. Very clearly, like there's a relationship and a precedent that's already been set with this front office and that agency in negotiations. So I thought that was a very savvy move to see him switch representation. And we know that what Ryan Pohl said that, you know, they've got to prioritize extensions. Doesn't just mean, okay, well, since he's the next guy in terms of like his contract's up, he's going into a contract year, he's 32 years old, doesn't necessarily mean that he would be the next one to get paid, but we'll see. Like clearly he's thinking like, all right, I want to prove that. Cause you don't, you know, he told us in March that he was given, like the team kind of let him explore some options, and the Texans and the Jets were two teams that he told us that they were like, okay, potentially like sending him there in terms of being a trade partner in places that he thought he might want to go.
Right.
But he made a major life change after 11 seasons with the Chargers to like come here. Your career longevity is dependent upon finding a place where you can fit and fit quickly.
Yeah.
I think he can do that as this security blanket, you know, short yardage threat threat over the middle of the field, threat coming out of the slot for Caleb Williams, and you know, find a role pretty quickly for himself that way, because he's always been that guy.
There's no better player. Like, if I'm in a third and seven, I'm dreaming about that now. Like, you got a third and seven set up and Keenan Allen sitting there. Oh, okay. So we got a first down, basically. It's still on Caleb to get it there, and the play's got to work. But, like, there's no better player in the NFL right now than Keenan Allen on, you know, a little bit third and maybe a little bit longer. We talked about the tight end room a little bit, but there's a few tight ends on this roster. Cole Kmet, Gerald Everett, Mercedes Lewis, and I believe Steven Carlson still on the roster as well. He probably don't make it, right? Like,
there'll be somebody on the practice squad. Yeah. They've kept three on the roster before. I don't think Mercedes Lewis, like, Mercedes is the question mark here. Ooh. A, can he make it through a training camp? Like, he's in his 19th season. You don't come back for a 19th season unless you feel like you're not just coming back for training camp. Are you kidding me? Like, right. You know, there's a reason. He's a savvy vet. He signed after OTAs in mini camp ended, so he wouldn't have to show up, because that's what he does and that's what he's entitled to do at age 40.
Right.
But, you know, I do wonder, like, you know, you've got health is not guaranteed. Your stamina, all of those things that he has worked so hard. I just finished writing a story on him and just all of the things he's done to get to this point, to still be contributing, you know, to on the field and off the field. He's got the intangible stuff that I think the Bears do not want to let out of this building. So they're going to find a way to make sure he gets on this roster. Of course, his stat line is not going to ever, like, impress you at this point, but the dirty work, this guy can still block defensive ends.
Yeah.
That's important. So I have him as the third tight end here, which, again, like, circling back to that fullback conversation, does Shane Waldron go with a third tight end for that role over a fullback? Like, that's a conversation that they're going to have, and it's all going to depend on what Mercedes Lewis looks like at this age, you know, months removed from the end of last season where he showed really no signs of slowing down.
Yeah, and to me, he's almost like stability, right? Like, it's
for sure. That's the right word.
He's just, I'm not expecting him to be great out there. I'm not expecting him to be Mercedes Lewis of 10 years ago. What I'm expecting him to do is, there's a lot of young guys in the building. Teach them how to be a pro. Teach them how to figure out, okay, how to navigate this NFL. Teach them how to not get too high and too low. Mm-hmm. And keep this team on point. Keep this team. He's one of your leaders in the locker room. He's always on the leadership committee for a reason. And listen, like, Matt Eberflus has credited him, saying, you know, a big part of last season, us staying focused at the end of the season, you got to look at Mercedes, and that's why they were willing to bring him back. That, to me, is something that there's no way, right? Like, when you're the coach's guy, like, Mercedes Lewis to me is the coach's guy. There's no way he doesn't make the team.
Yeah.
I assume Gerald Everett is a lock on this team as well, because for sure, of the history of being with Shane Waldron, understanding the system, Cole Kmet's pay. So I think that's your tight end room right there. And like you said, you don't expect to see, like, I'll see Mercedes Lewis if we're running some jumbo packages. You know, like, you almost want to forget he's on the run.
He's big in the run game. Like, yes. I, you know, that's something that you can't, this is number two rushing offense last year. That can't be overlooked. He does the dirty work. Like, are you expecting, you know, that he's going to have, you know, the catches and all that stuff? Honestly, at this point of his career, like, that doesn't matter. It's the intangible stuff and it's the blocking that he can still do very effectively at his age.
All right, let's get into the offensive line a little bit, because this is the one that I think is the most interesting. You feel like you've got some locks at positions, but they're locks at positions that still feel like question marks. Tevin Jenkins to me is on the roster. Braxton Jones, Ryan Bates, Coleman Shelton. Nate Davis is on the roster because cutting him would cost too much, I think, at this point. And, of course, Darnell Wright, Karan Amageji as well. But there's some names on this that, I mean, they've been contributors in the past, guys like Jatir Carter, guys like Larry Borum, who, yeah, they haven't been the best, but they've been solid depth pieces. And with $12 million left over, could you see the Bears add to this offensive line possibly? What do you think the final offensive line is going to be?
So I've got nine making it, and this is my starting offensive line. It would be Braxton Jones at left tackle, Tevin Jenkins at left guard, Ryan Bates at center, Nate Davis at right guard, Darnell Wright. The depth that you have here, like, this is not as hard of an exercise as it's been on the offensive line in years past, but Coleman Shelton, I mean, the guy played over 1,100 snaps at center last year. He started at the position for the Rams, at various points over the last two seasons. That's good interior depth that they didn't have. Karan Amageji is starting on NFI, and we know that he's not going to be ready to like start contending for a starting spot at left tackle right now. But, you know, they made this their draft pick with the future in mind. My final two are Jatari Carter, who you mentioned. That's a Ryan Poles draft pick from year one. And then Matt Pryor. I do not have Larry Borum making this roster. To me, he is like there's an escalator in his contract that I think would have him making around $3 million this season. So it's as much of a financial decision as it is we feel like we're good with these nine that we have. So he's not a Ryan Poles draft pick. Has he been a good swing tackle? He's been serviceable for them in that spot. But I do think that they go a different direction there.
Yeah, I mean, the offensive line, like I said, the only way that I see something major changing is if you see them kind of go out there and maybe add a guy like Connor Williams if they're not confident at the center position, which I understand the question mark. I have question marks there, right? I mm-hmm. understand, you know, everybody Ryan Bates does. Is his guy. Ryan Poles believes in him, but we've done this experiment, right? Like, this is the Lucas Patrick situation all over again, and you just hope that it works better this time.
Yeah, and there's, like, they did make some of these, like, cost-effective free moves in free agency just to bring some depth in. So there's camp bodies there. There are a couple guys that they ended up signing that will be practice squad eligible. But I think they're more confident in their interior depth than they were at this point last year because the question mark with Tevin Jenkins, can you stay healthy for a season? Because remember, he's in a contract year, too. Yep. Ryan Bates may have been like the apple of Ryan Poles' eye, but he still was benched. Like I think he appeared in every game last year or close to every game, but he was pulled from a lot of contests because of how Buffalo felt there. So is it as much of an upgrade as it's been being put out there by the Bears? Maybe, maybe not, but at least they have like an option that, you know, because they never got that position off the ground since this staff took over. In 2022, Lucas Patrick gets hurt the first day of camp, and they were never really able to recover from that. So it finally feels like, okay, all the pieces are here for them to get off the ground with this position if they can stay healthy. And then they'll have an option if they don't feel that Ryan Bates is up to it. But from everything I've been told, they do.
Yeah, and listen, the confidence in them, I'm glad that they have it. I just want to see it in a real game because I'm never confident in a guy who has 150 lifetime snaps at the position that's supposed to be protecting my brand new quarterback. So I kind of want to, that's the most interesting one to me. Do you think there's a scenario where we get into camp, it's not going as well as we hope, they ride it out, but they sign somebody like Connor Williams where you can get him in on maybe a little bit less coming off an ACL injury. He would be the best center on the roster by far, but he's not going to be playing at a minimum until week one.
Yeah, I mean, that's hard because if you have somebody that's still recovering from an off-season surgery and you're trying to make sure that Caleb Williams doesn't have to deal with a revolving door at that position, you want him to have the consistency with one guy consistently throughout training camp. However, if it doesn't work out with Ryan Bates and like, you know, they were moving guys around during the spring because Nate Davis was in and out of the lineup. We don't know if anything was injury related there, but they just felt that they had to do that. So cross-training is going to, like I said, is going to continue at that position on, you know, all three positions on the interior. But they need to make sure if they're going to do this right, that the center quarterback exchange is seamless by the time training camp ends, honestly, until like when they're going into the preseason, they've got to make sure that that part is down pat, like preseason, meaning ahead of week three or the third preseason game when camp officially ends and they go into the preseason schedule. That's got to be really like one of their top priorities because they can't afford to have, okay, well, the Ryan Bates experiment isn't working out. All right, Coleman Shelton, you're in. Okay, well, Shelton, like, you know, isn't working out. Like then what option are you down to? I think that's a serious concern, considering last year it was like, all right, well, it should be fine because Cody Whitehair's back at center. Well, Cody Whitehair wasn't a good center. And I know that's not something that was easy for them to like have to like admit, but like their contingency plan for that when he had to move back to left guard because of Tevin Jenkins' injury, and then you have Lucas Patrick getting back in, like they've got to make sure their contingency plan, if their like number one option doesn't work out, is much better than it was last year.
But yeah, well, Kilt, I'll still never forget just us hearing that, you know, well, we pulled Cody Whitehair for Lucas Patrick because he's got the experience at center. It was like,
It was a financial decision.
Cody Whitehair played like 5 years at center. What are we talking about here?
Yeah.
Let's take a look at this defensive line. The defensive line, I think, is interesting because I think there are pieces on this line that are going to make it based on what we currently have, whether the Bears add or not. Dominique Robinson is a massive bubble guy for me right now, but the guys that I think definitely make it, Montez Sweat, DeMarcus Walker, Austin Booker for sure, Andrew Billings, Javon Dexter, Zach Pickens, and I'm going to throw Brian Coward out there as well, mm-hmm. and then Keith Randolph Jr. I think those are locks. DeMarcus Robinson to me...
Dominique Robinson.
To me is like... Listen, it's 3 years of this experience. Maybe mm-hmm. special teams saves him. The new kickoff rule, I think he's perfect for.
Because he's been out there a lot.
Next to his name.
Yeah, he's been out there a lot. Like, I have him on my roster. I actually have them going light here at 8 just because I do think they've got about $12 million in cap space. There's room to add another pass rusher, even one on the interior. Like, because I make this list right now at the start of camp. I have no clue whether Javon Dexter is going to make a leap in year two, whether he's going to be ready to man the three technique position full time and not on a rotational basis. You hope. You spent a second round pick on the guy. They've made a big deal about how they feel he's grown so far, but you just don't know. So I could see them adding another defensive tackle if they don't feel like they've got a capable starter there. At three technique, I could also see them, and I would expect them, just given what this roster looks like, that position, to add somebody to start opposite Montez Sweat. DeMarcus Walker has been doing that during OTAs and minicamp, and he'll be a part of that rotation. I don't know if they view him, and like we won't get to see it yet until there's either a roster upgrade or there's not. I don't have, let me see what mine is. Like, so I have Jake Martin on there. Like, he was with the Colts. I believe there was an overlap there with knowing Eberflus and the defense. We also saw him out there on special teams as well. Like, just because of some of the blocking assignments and what's required with different body types now on kickoff, that to me is a Jake Martin and a Dominique Robinson. That gives them a roster spot in this. But this is one of the harder ones because I just don't think that they're done at the position yet. So I could very well see this happening and changing over the next couple of weeks. And, you know, I know camp starts tomorrow or starts on Saturday. It wouldn't surprise me if somebody gets signed right before then, because that's what they've done the last couple of years. They did it with the offensive line in 2022. They did it early in August with Yannick Ngakoue last year, and he's still out there. We were, you know, under the impression that the ankle surgery that he had, I believe it was December, would be something that he'd be able to recover from enough in time if he were to get into a camp somewhere, and he knows the defense. Like, that's important. If you're signing somebody at this time of year, you need a veteran who is not going to be a liability in terms of picking up the scheme. And we know that he wouldn't be.
When you look at the two big names that have been thrown out there around the Bears, it's been Yannick Ngakoue mm-hmm. and Emmanuel Ogba. Does one have an edge over another in your mind? Of course, Yannick has been in the system, so he's been here before. Ogba, I think, has more versatility. We saw him play nose tackle last season. We've seen him play on the outside and be a 9-sack guy. Is there one or the other that you look at right now and you say, I could see that being a Ryan Poles guy?
I think Ngakoue probably has the edge, like, in terms of knowing the defense. We really did, even though it was a small sample size, he felt like he was starting to come along when he got paired with Sweat last year before he injured his ankle. And then, you know, beyond that, he's not going to be as expensive. You can get him at a discount because coming off the injury, I think he's 30 right now. So, like, he's dealt with the injury last year. Like, he's been a couple different places. Excuse me, he's 29. But he still has production. Last year was the first year since, what am I looking at here? Because he had a couple years where he had two different teams. But last year's the first year he didn't have at least eight sacks in a season. He had 4 because he got hurt. I still think he's a very productive pass rusher. He's more of a one-dimensional pass rusher. You're not getting a whole ton from him as a run defender. But I don't think you're not signing him expecting that he's going to, like, a zebra's going to change its stripes at that point of his career. So I think that would probably be the most logical option for, you know, them to add somebody there for their pass rush.
I would love it because to me, like, he's the perfect guy to come in and work with Austin Booker. You know what I mean? Like sure. I want him to be better at the run than Yannick is. Listen, I'd be a lot better, but in less than 500 snaps, you saw Austin Booker be a guy who consistently was in the backfield, and he had switched over from, I believe it was at Minnesota before he went to Kansas. Like when you see a guy who's like, okay, he's kind of back of the depth chart. He just transferred in. There's not a lot. Yeah, we're not going to give him this huge role, but every time he's on the field, he makes an impact.
Yeah,
that 12 sounds sacks exactly is, like Yannick Ngakoue.
12 sacks as a, you know, somebody, I think he only started one game last year at Kansas. That's impressive. That shows you're making the most of your opportunity, and you don't need starter snaps to make an impact. That'll be a good one of all the rookies, because we know that like Rome's going to have a role early on. Torrey Taylor's going to have a role early on. Karan's not going to be ready for a little bit. And of course, I mean, Caleb's in his own category. He's the quarterback of the team, but like, Austin Booker of the draft picks is interesting because how ready is he to contribute? Like he's played the outside linebacker spot. He's been like a true, you know, he's been a true dirt in the, you know, hand in the dirt, you know, sort of pass rusher and rushing from that stance. Like I'd like to believe that they can get kind of creative in how they want to use him. It just kind of depends on the scheme though, because we know like they want to get pressure with their four down linemen. They have been pretty adamant about how they align guys up front. Is Austin Booker ready to take on a role like that? I'm not, like, we'll see, because obviously you can't tell with the pass rush until they have pads on, and it's difficult to do in camp, difficult to do in the spring.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now here's a room to me that maybe, listen, I think the front guys are phenomenal guys to have on your team, but maybe it's a little bit thinner as far as depth on this team. The linebacker room to me is one that is interesting. You got Tremaine Edmonds, you got TJ Edwards, Jack Sanborn. Those are your top three. Then you're really just talking about Noah Sewell and Eamon. I'm calling him OG. I asked Fluce last year, how do you say his name? He said, I call him OG. I was like, all right, dog. Like, all right. Amen, OG. Ogbin Bamega. I gave it a shot.
Yeah, that's close, I think. I'm not even going to try. But no, I mean, he's a core special teamer.
Yeah.
I think he played the fourth most snaps last year for the Chargers. The line, that's Dylan Cole. That is Dylan Cole on this roster, and Dylan Cole's no longer here. So that's why they made that signing in free agency. Yeah. No Sewell, who knows? Like, maybe this will be a year where he can push Jack Sanborn for that strong side linebacker spot. You know, knowing that Sanborn next year is going into a contract year. I don't think this room is very sexy, just in terms of there's no drama. Like, you have your top two linebackers, top two tacklers on the team, even in moments where TJ Edwards outperformed your very expensive linebacker in Tremaine Edmonds, but the two of them together are, you know, a force in the middle of the defense, and they got that position right. They chose not to pay Roquan Smith, and then they could pay two linebackers, and I think it's worked to where in their mind they didn't overinvest in an off-ball linebacker whose primary responsibility is not rushing the passer. So their formula for this has led them to a room that has been, I think, set for quite some time.
No, for sure. And my thing with this is I love Noah Sewell, the athlete. I love the speed that he shows. I love how he's able to jump and all of that. Can he think more than Jack Sanborn? That's the thing for me. Or even, I guess I should say, can he think less than Jack Sanborn? Because the one thing about Jack Sanborn is he's not fast. He's not going to jump the highest. He's not going to be the sexy guy on the team. But Jack Sanborn is going to be where he's supposed to be. And there's never a question about it. And that is something at that linebacker position. Whenever we talk to Lance about it, that's more valuable than anything. If you can run a 4-4, that's phenomenal. But can you play at a 4-4? Or are you playing at you run a 4-6, but you can play at a 4-4, right? So Jack Sanborn, to me, like it's going to be tough to knock him off his spot. But we'll see if they're able to do it. I think that's the room to me that's the thinnest and maybe gives me the most concern if we were to see an injury outside of, you know, if Montez Sweat goes down or something like that, knock on wood. But then you got your DB room, which, my God, maybe the strongest in the NFL.
They've been building towards this. Like, it's such a position of, like, focus for them. Like, you think about the investments they made back in 2022 when they go defense with those second round picks that they had with Kyler Gordon and then Jaquan Brisker, and starting to build towards that. I think this is the strength of the team, period. Not just the defense, strength of the team, because you've got one of the best, if not the best, cover corners in Jalen Johnson, who had like a 33.3 passer rating into his coverage last year. Tyreek Stevenson had bumps and bruises like every cornerback does who gets tested as a rookie. And he came out the other side better for it. I think that those two on the outside, Kyler Gordon has, evolved in the nickel role, and he's been tremendous with it the last couple of years. And even battling through that hand injury, he's in a spot where, I mean, we know that that's like a starting position in the NFL. Those three are set. And then, of course, with Kevin Byard, like, the ball production is one thing. The health is another. Yeah. That's a big reason that they ended up having to move on from Eddie Jackson, just because the injuries the last couple of years with his foot, you know, put them at a disadvantage where they had to, like, swap guys in and out. What Jaquan told us this spring was that it's a little different. They're playing left and right, so they're playing sides, and that's something that he was not doing with Eddie Jackson. So in his idea is that, you know, you'll never be able to tell, like, which side, you know, you won't be able to, like, predetermine which side both of us are going to. So it does sound like, you know, the differentiation between free safety, strong safety, is somebody playing up, playing deep, you know, the deep third of the field, is somebody closer to the box. That stuff still matters. But I just thought that was an interesting little takeaway from how he addressed that. But those five that I named right there, find me a better secondary. Find me a secondary that's played together that many snaps. And you do have decent depth. Terrell Smith has had to start a couple games last year. As a fifth round pick, he did a pretty good job. And then Jonathan Owens is a third safety. Solid, just solid. That's the way that I described that. And then I think who else I have here, especially at that cornerback position, you know, Jalen Jones, Josh Blackwell, Greg Stroman. You have depth, and you have special teams contributions. And oftentimes the 48th through 53rd spot on the roster comes down to those, you know, to special teams contributors and return teams, coverage units. Like, you can always bank on at least two or three spots being from the defensive back room going to that group.
No, for sure. The one thing that I love about this team is, right, I think, and I'm not saying that I think that Tyree Stevenson could lose a spot or Kyler Gordon or any of that, but Terrell Smith was really good when he got his opportunities. He's somebody that, to me, not to say keep an eye on him to take over that spot, but as a guy who just pushes everybody to be better. Like, there were moments last season, especially at this point in training camp, right, we were getting ready to go into preseason games, where I was like, Terrell Smith is better than Tyree Stevenson. Like, I'm a little bit worried right now. Now, it ends up working itself out as they go through. Reek ends up being a starter, struggled through the beginning, got himself right in the second half of the season. But I think that Terrell Smith is as much of a lock to make this team as anybody on that DB unit, because of how he was able to be not just a solid backup, but, like you said, somebody who can come in and give you some really good starting minutes out there as the number two.
Yeah, and it's a solid draft pick. Like, you can tell, like, where they've really made an investment there and where they've hit on guys because of how many, like, even like the Jalen Jones, I believe, is an undrafted free agent. He's been with the team now for a couple of years. That's somebody that they hit on. Stroman is somebody they've identified has been part of this as well. And, you know, having depth at this position, you can never have too many corners. And that's honestly, like, where they're at now, to where years ago when they first took over, they were struggling at that position to find somebody who could be a starter opposite Jalen Johnson, who at that time they didn't know if he'd be what he is today. And he bet on himself, and he proved that he can.
Yeah, no, it's such a different world that we're in than 3 years ago. And it's so amazing, because it's just like, we go through this list. Like, I remember doing these when Ryan Poles first got here. I remember doing these the final year of Matt Nagy. And you're having real debates on guys that, at the end of the day, in your mind, you're like, we got to talk about them because they're on the team, but these guys suck. Like, now you're at a point where
they're trying to fill out a roster at that point.
Yeah, now it's like, okay, who's going to make the back end of this thing? Like, so it's very exciting to see special teams. I mean, special teams has been locked up forever. Mm-hmm. Patrick Scales is going to be the long snapper. Cairo Santos is your kicker. Torrey Taylor is booming the punts, even though, watch out for his backup signing somewhere. The other punter that was at OTA. I mean, like, every punt Torrey Taylor did, the backup punter had one to match, but it was left-footed, so it was spinning the other way. Like, it was kind of interesting to watch.
Yeah, and no, I mean, that's a good spot to be in. We're so far removed now from the kicking competitions of a couple years ago, and Cairo coming off a career-best season, there's a reason he got that extension back in December. And, you know, when you don't have to go into camp wondering about that, that's a good, even not just for the special teams coordinator, that's a good spot for all the whole staff to be in.
I always think back on the fact that we had an off season of kicker talk. We got to the season and we were like, we finally got the right guy. and none of it mattered because the team was terrible. Like, it was like, we're right there. Oh, we're not going to be kicking much because we're not going to be in a position to do so. Listen, let us know who you guys have making the team. I think that we've got a solid football team here, and I think that there could still be some additions made. I have to commend Ryan Poles. I do this almost every day on this podcast, even on the Windy City Breeze, where it's like, I know where we've come from. I have to commend him for the job that he's done putting this team together. Now it's up to this team to go out there and make the plays and do the right things. And it's on Matt Eberflus to go out there and, you know, have this training camp actually mean something. Have these practices mean something. Have the preseason mean something.
And that's really what I'm focused on. You know, they have 2 years of this now. Like, remember, you and I have talked about this. There were times last year where it was like, we could all look back on it in hindsight, but there were moments where in training camp, you're wondering, are they really ready for Green Bay in that season opener? Are they really ready to start the season? And the answer was no. So, like, not that we'll be able to tell that early on, but, like, what changes? Because there's a line you have to ride with intensity to where you don't want to like overdo it and get guys injured, and thinking about how many soft tissue injuries they were dealing with in camp last year, what's their plan to make sure that the problems that they had show up during training camp last year aren't an issue anymore? Yeah. Now they have the benefit of time and experience and the staff being here for a couple of years to know what worked and what didn't.
Yeah, no, for sure. So let's see if we can get this team ready to go by the start of the season. I can't wait to be out there. I will see you Friday, Court. I guess that's tomorrow. I will see you tomorrow up at camp. For you guys out there, hit that like button, subscribe to the page, leave a 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. For Courtney Cronin, it's your boy, Pat the Designer. Back at it again. Y'all stay safe out there, Chicago. Bear down. One love. Peace.